Cubberty on 2FM with Super Value Travel Insurance. Holidaying at home or abroad? Don't worry about a thing with Great Value Travel Insurance at supervalue.ie.
During the week, columnist with the Financial Times, Lucy Calloway, wrote an article titled, Let's Face It, Looks Do Count When It Comes to Hiring, which is why I'm in radio. Here to chat about this and more is Director of Communications Clinic, Owen McDermott. Not our own Owen McDermott, of course. Completely different Owen McDermott.
How's it going? Handsome one, I think he is. So, yeah, indeed. But in fact, on radio, it does kind of matter. Even the voice, it does have an impact.
Ah.
There is a bias.
And I guess I am on TV as well, so
yeah,
I can't really say
course.
That.
So there is a bias. I think it was in the BBC back in the 50s, there was a bias against women and their voices because people didn't feel it had that much authority to read the news. So biases, whether it happens to be looks or age and gender happen to be illegal, but biases do exist, I think, all across the positions. And I think as much as we would not like to believe it, subconsciously looks do matter. It's depressing, but they do. It's implicit, it's intrinsic in us that since Neanderthal times, we have developed a capacity to make decisions on people within a blink of an eye, friend or foe. And the same thing happens with looks. We either decide, are we finding this person attractive or not? An Italian university, for example, back in 2013, did a huge piece of research where they looked at about 2,000 applicants and pretty much discovered that the good-looking applicants are more likely to get through to the second round. Similarly, even on something, you could argue, well, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, something more objective like height. University of Florida found that for every inch of height a tall worker has, they can expect to earn about $789 per month or
what?
Per year. So if you even look, for example, at two equally skilled people with one who happens to be 6 inches taller, that person who's 6 inches taller can expect to earn about $5,000 more. So height, all of those things come in.
That is crazy. How does the... What is it about the height that brings
it? Yeah, well,
in?
There is a thought that there's more authority to it, apparently. Like Fortune 500 companies, who are the organisations in the States who have the biggest revenues, a disproportionate amount of their CEOs are over 6 foot. I think the average of US citizens who are over 6 foot is about 15.5%, whereas these guys, 58% of them are over it. So there again, height again has a thing. So there is all of those biases that come through, whether it happens to be how someone looks, how tall they are. Now, that can be incredibly detrimental to an organisation and its development because you're fishing from a very small pool. But we all have those biases and I think it's important for us to recognise them that we do.
Completely. I have a few friends that when they've gone for jobs in retail, they've asked them for photographs of themselves.
Yeah.
Well, which I thought was crazy. I was kind of like, why would they? And they're like, oh, it's so that they can judge your style and how good you are at wearing clothes. It's like, oh, I don't know about that.
Or there is the one where we're saying, well, they'll know who you are in interview, but I don't think that's too credible. I think probably there was a famous one of Abercrombie who would hire purely on how handsome or pretty somebody was.
Well, because they call the people in there. I think they've just stopped, but they used to call the people who worked for them models, didn't they?
And now I think they're called brand representatives. So it's again something a little bit more less iffy. But that was an approach that they took. And that's actually a question that people will ask, should I put a photograph on my CV or not? And my advice is to not. Well, why would you? It's not needed. It shouldn't come into the job decision or the job making process.
It's like the same thing as people who don't put their age on a CV because they think that if they're, you know, a little bit older that they might lose out to someone who's younger or just out of college or something like that.
Totally. And it's again one of those things that is a bias and it's discriminatory. There happens to be 9 things that people can't be discriminated against going for a job: age, gender, race, they all happen to be them. How someone looks isn't one of them.
What?
But I'm sure it comes into how attractive they are isn't one of them.
If an employer actually said something like, oh, I'm not going to hire them because they're bleh, they couldn't actually get into trouble for that.
Well, you wouldn't know. It wouldn't be probably the best piece of feedback an employer would be giving, but it is a huge risk. Like even particularly for internal competitions, if the competitors or if people internally get a whiff that there is a bias in a job interview or if someone's getting a job because either they're buddies with the boss or they happen to feel that the boss fancies them, that creates huge difficulties for morale. Mm-hmm. For example, I prepare people for job interviews and there was a woman I was working with for a number before the summer and she was going for them. And when I asked her, why are you leaving the current organization? She said, I went for a competition and I'm 99% sure the person who got it for me got it because the boss fancied them and I can't work in that environment. Now, whether she was right or wrong, that was the impression that she had, which doesn't create a happy working environment and is a huge risk for organisations.
Not at all, especially if that person then goes in there and they start getting promotions, and then employees actually working for that company are surely going to feel the same thing as well.
Totally.
So surely there's some jobs that luck does have to fit.
I think if you're probably presenting Blue Peter or you're a model, I would say looks do come into it.
Yeah.
There are some jobs where you say, gosh, there is a high proportion of these people are hugely attractive. There's an organisation I work with who market alcohol brands internationally. And I have to say, men and women, they're all outrageously attractive. And I think that's quite an unusual thing. I think you're probably, though, limiting again people's skills and ability to do it. And there's ways around it, you know, and how do you choose the right person is the big question for an organisation. And I think there's some have begun to learn. Orchestras, for example, have begun to do auditions blind, where they get the musicians to play behind a screen.
Wow.
So that they're not making the decision based on gender, that they're purely basing it on the person's ability to play the music. And Microsoft and Unilever, similarly in Mexico, are going through a study at the minute where they're doing an interview process where the first 3 minutes is done behind a screen. So the first impression isn't based on how the person looks, but in fact,
it's kind of like The Voice.
Like The Voice, where they're going, okay, let's just listen to this and see how good they are and let's judge them on that. Now, not every organisation in Ireland will be able to introduce screens or have people sit with their back to the candidate, but I think it's an interesting way where you're just judging it on, okay, the quality of the stuff coming through.
Mm-hmm.
For people, though, interviewing, really what they need to do
is... I was going to say, how do people actually avoid it? Because it is, even for people who don't maybe, like you're saying, go into, like as an interviewer, go into it, the situation and think, this isn't something that affects me. It might subconsciously affect them.
Completely. Whether it's you have a preference for men or women, which again is illegal, but there is a tendency that people might lean one way or the other. And how it is overcome, or how you can attempt to overcome it, is through absolute clarity in what you're looking for, is full handle on what are the things that this person needs to do. For example, if you pick a position like a PR executive, you say, OK, that person needs to be able to build very strong relationships with clients, work really well in the team, write exceptionally well, have excellent communication skills, be able to handle deadlines. OK, that's what I'm hunting for in there.
Yeah.
But often people don't think that. Again, I would prep the other side of the table on how to do job interviews. And invariably at the start of a course, you'd say, well, why are you here? And the people say, well, I get handed a CV and said, go in and interview that person. And they don't really know what they're looking for. They don't know how to handle it. And that clarity that they should have is, OK, well, what do we really need this person to do? And then they need the skill to be able to hunt for it. The right questions, how to follow up, how to understand evidence, and how to be able to compare and contrast projects versus projects.
And what about an interviewee? How would they approach it? Can they do anything?
Of course they can. I suppose whether you look like George Clooney or you look like Gollum, I would still advise the same approach, that you have actually a capacity to say, OK, I'm going to deliver and develop a case for myself that absolutely says I'm the best person for the job. How you do that is moving it away from general assertions that says I'm great in a team to being able to fully evidence it with some projects that you know are very relevant for the job but are clear of what you are doing within that role. That pretty much what you're in is a situation where your objective is to persuade the other side of the table that you're the best person for it. How you do that is through good evidence, good case, and then also understanding the organisation better than anybody else.
And of course, dressing well as well. That always comes into it, being togged out,
I think, is always good. I would obviously be of the view, though, that your clothes shouldn't distract, that it should fit with the organisation you're going for.
Yep.
So if you're going for a role within a young, youthful radio station, well, you probably should dress appropriately for that.
With my backwards cap right now.
Yeah, well, you're cutting a dash. It fits with the culture.
I walk in here with my skateboard every day. I'm totally on brand.
Similarly, if you're going for a job in a bank, you'd need to box clever and fit with what is expected within that. That really your clothes shouldn't outshine your competence, that it's there as wallpaper and that you have an ability to say, okay, I'll dress appropriately and come through on it. But those first impressions count, and it can be down to simple things like how to shake hands. Like, it would surprise you that still people get that wrong.
So wrong.
Yeah, either are too limp or then break your hand and all you can do for the next 5 minutes is wonder how many fingers they've broken.
Yeah.
And it's getting that thing right. It's being able to be warm and friendly immediately when you meet people.
What about the likes of tattoos and piercings and stuff like that? Because I got a piercing in my ear and I've got a tattoo on my arm right here.
What does it say?
It says, people think it says never kettle, but it actually says never settle.
Ah, very good.
So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I, I think in terms of those, I think it again would go back to the role. Like, for example, there's a couple of people I work who are heavily tattooed, but mm-hmm. they work in fashion, they work in music, and you say, okay, well, that fits with what that is. I then would be a little hesitant, if I'm honest, to say, okay, you should go into a job in a big four accountancy firm where your tattoos are on show. Now, mm-hmm. that's might be right or might be wrong, but my view would be that the people interviewing, the clients, for example, also may have a bias against tattoos and piercings.
Yeah, for whatever they think it means.
Yeah, or you know, and it doesn't mean that they're right, but it just means that that's what's in their head.
Yeah. Do you think it will ever change? Do you think people will change their perceptions and start to...
I don't. I'm not sure. I know one of the large accountancy firms, for example, in terms of clothes for their junior staff have relaxed it greatly where they don't have to turn up in suits every day. If mm-hmm. they're not client-facing, it can actually be, you know, dressed down. You can wear
jeans.
Because
that's what Google have done and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. They've always been kind of like, yeah, you don't need to... You dress fancy all the time. You just like wear what you want.
Yeah,
you're
I actually oddly find that as the most stressful thing you could ever have. Like I find actually
just having
a dress and a suit is really easy because you just say, "There's a suit. That shirt kind of matches, and I'll just wear that."
Up to fifth year, I was in a uniform school, and then sixth year, I went to another school, and I was like,
stressed
"This is the worst thing in the world. An hour a day. What am I going to wear?" It is. And that creates so much more judgments, obviously, in the schoolyard and all that sort of stuff, but so much more judgments as well, obviously, in the workplace.
But it applied the same model. Of course it happens. Mm-hmm. And that bias, that judgment, that prejudice occurs, whether it's how you look and how you dress. And what you're trying to do is make sure that your capacity or skills shine through.
Amen. Thank you so much, Owen, for coming in. Very much appreciated. Hopefully it does change and people start just getting judged on how nice they are.